Growing up in rural Stewart County and Montgomery County, I grew up about a generation older than I should have. What I mean by that is that the practices of the people, my family, my people, were older practices. For example, we didn't have a farm. We had about a half acre that we grew a big garden on, but my Uncle Dude had a farm, and his name wasn't Dude. That was a nickname he got early on. You can imagine how. My Uncle Dude had a farm, and he was one of those old-timey farmers. He plowed with mules, and I learned to plow with mules, okay? And you develop a relationship with the mules you plow with, and they develop a relationship with you. And if you've never plowed with mules or been around them, believe me, they have a mind of their own. You are not necessarily in control of what's going on. Oh, you try to be with your voice and with the rain, but We also had our own chickens. We gathered eggs. When we ate fried chicken, we did not go to the store and find it wrapped up in plastic. It was running around that back lot. And we killed hogs. We had hogs, and we made sausage, and we had shoulders and hams. And I knew exactly where those had come from because I had been a part of helping to kill the hogs, to prepare that meat. Actually, my dad and I usually wound up rendering the lard, which is a pretty nasty job out in the yard with a big, round, black kettle. I had a relationship with my food. Now, that sounds a little weird to us because we don't think you need a relationship with your food. All you have to do is go to the store, buy it. It's just like any other substance, and you just eat it. But you see, I knew that those animals had given their lives so my life could be nourished. That makes a difference in how you view the animal and how you view your food. I'll guarantee you it does. Now, in the story that you heard, it's the story of Noah. You know the story. The world is destroyed by flood. Noah's family is saved. Some of the animals are saved. Depending on the tradition, it's only two of every kind. Depending on another tradition, it's seven of the clean animals and two of the others. But either way, only a selection of animals are chosen. And when the flood subsides, God makes a promise to Noah. And that promise is that God will never again destroy the earth. Not just by flood. That comes in this part. The previous promise, just before this, is that God will never again destroy the whole earth. Why? Because God realizes that we are evil in the imaginations of our hearts. Not a very complimentary description, huh? We just can't help being destructive sometimes. Even when we do the best we know how to do, we don't see the consequences of our actions. And so we wind up doing harm when we intended to do good. In a way, it's a variation of what Jesus says to those who have nailed him to the cross. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. God realized that we human beings don't know what we're doing most of the time. And so to punish us by destroying everything didn't do a bit of good. In a sense, God has changed the divine mind. Now, the ancient Hebrews had no trouble with that. God changing is an issue for us. Because you see, we've read Aristotle and Plato and have a sense of an unmoved mover that does not change. But the ancient Hebrew God could change. And God repents of having destroyed the whole world. And then Noah builds an altar of stones and sacrifices some of the clean animals. And in that sacrifice, a fire would be built. The animals would be cooked, actually incinerated. And the storyteller describes God as someone like you walking past your neighbor's house when they're having a cookout, when they've got the grill going, and you smell what they're cooking. God smelled the aroma of the sacrifice, and it was pleasing to God. And then God makes an agreement. The agreement includes never to destroy the whole world again, but this is a more specifically focused agreement. Never again, when it rains, do you have to be afraid that the entire earth will be flooded. Parts of it, perhaps, but never again the entire earth. And the reminder of that agreement will be a bow. It's the same word that's used for the bow of bow and arrow, the weapon. God lays down the weapon so that when God in future time gets angry and wants to just smash human beings, God will see the bow. We call it a rainbow. God will see the bow, and God will be reminded of who we are, how frail we are, and God will not bring destruction on us. Now, God does not promise not to let us destroy ourselves, but God will not initiate that destruction again. The reminder is for God. Of course, it's a reminder for us, too, when we see the bow. Now, the covenant, it's interesting. The covenant is not just made with Noah and his family and their descendants. No, the covenant is made with all creatures of every kind, of all flesh. Do you hear that repeated in that story? All creatures are part of that covenant, which means we are kin to those domestic animals that we depend on to eat. We are kin even to the wild animals that strike fear in our hearts. I don't know if you read or heard that a Canadian writer named Farley Mowat died this past week. If you know any of his books, you probably know a book called Never Cry Wolf, published a number of years ago, in which he even talks about wolves and human relationship to the wolf population in Canada. Even those animals we fear are somehow related to us. I always find it interesting that over the past century and a half, Christians have taken such offense at the idea that we may be related to other primates. The teller of this story has no problem with that. We are indeed related to them. God made a covenant with all of us. We are family, in essence. So how do we treat our animals? Well, we treat our pets pretty well. Well, we try to, I think. Those who don't treat their pets well are caught and punished, or at least we hope they are. But it's very interesting that some decades back, we decided, I'm not sure who exactly decided this, but we decided that it would be better, instead of running farms like farms, that we should run farms like factories. And so instead of being related to that animal who may later provide food for you, those animals just become the material of production. Kept in small cages, small enclosures, where they can hardly move all of their lives. Now, this is very common today. Much of our meat that we eat comes to us this way, unless you know farmers around here and you purchase your meat from them. It's interesting to me that if someone is running a puppy mill, we will arrest them and put them in jail. But that's not true for the animals that we eat. Some years ago, I got a chance to hear Elie Wiesel speak. And Wiesel, as part of his speech, said something that has really stuck with me ever since. He said he was not going to use the term tolerate or toleration. He said when you tolerate someone, it puts you in a superior position and them in an inferior position because it's you who's doing the tolerating. No, he said from now on he was going to use the term respect. Because respect is something shared between or among equals. I would suggest to you that Jesus even ups the ante. Jesus calls us to love not just human beings, but all of God's creation. After all, he compares himself to a mother hen gathering chicks under his wings, doesn't he? Now, love is not some kind of gushy feeling. I've said it before. Love is a policy. It's how we treat others, whether we like them or not. But in order to do that, we have to acknowledge that we have a relationship to them. They are not just material of production. They are living creatures with whom God made a covenant. And even if we choose to kill and eat them, we do so with respect. On the farm, you make sure that the killing is done as quickly as possible and as painlessly as possible. That's not always the case today, because farms are not what they used to be. How do we begin to respect the created order? It seems to me that we have moved away from a biblical understanding of creation into one that is simply based around the economy, making as much money as fast as possible. Last week we talked about seeing the goodness in creation. You can't see the goodness unless you actually see creation, if you don't stop and look. Well, not only do we stop and look and see the goodness, but here we're told we're called to respect that creation because God made a covenant, not just with us, but with all creatures of every kind, of all flesh. Now, one of the people who has influenced my thinking on this and influenced my writing, as a matter of fact, is a farmer who's also a writer of essays and a poet named Wendell Berry. And Berry has written for years and years and years about how one cares for the earth, cares for animals with respect, and I would suggest even that kind of love that is a policy. So it's not impossible. There are ways to do this. We just haven't taken the time to learn those ways. Some of us have. Some of us have, and thank goodness. All of this, I believe, comes out of Berry's deep understanding of his relatedness to other creatures and the earth itself. Did you listen to what you were singing during the first hymn? It's a variation of the prayer of St. Francis. Francis extended it beyond creatures that we think of as flesh. The sun is our brother. The moon is our sister. The earth is our mother. We are related like family to everything in creation because we only have one creator. Wendell Berry takes that seriously. If you want to learn more about this, you may want to read him. But I'm going to close with a poem that he wrote. I found, right after I got out of college, in an anthology called The Voice That Is Great Within Us. And it has stuck with me and been formative for me ever since. It's called The Peace of Wild Things. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free. Thanks be to God.